Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Peyto Exploration's first quarter 2012 conference call. With me in the room today, we've got Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. We've got Kathy Turgeon, our CFO. Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration. JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation. Tim Louie, our VP of Land. And, of course, we've got Jim Grant, our Investor Relations Representative. Now, Jim, I know you've been gathering questions about the quarter, so why don't I turn things over to you?
Thank you, Darren. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. So, Darren, our first quarter financial results are just out, showing positive earnings as well as substantial funds from operations comparable to last year this quarter, even on a per share basis, despite the fact that commodity prices aren't. How are we doing this?
Well, Jim, you know, as we outlined in our release, our funds from operations are up due to a 30% increase in production, and we also had a 24% decrease in our total cash costs. So, you know, those two things are obviously more than offsetting the drop in natural gas prices that we saw through the first quarter and from a year ago. Earnings, however, down a little bit, 15%, due to actually lower reserve life. We have a little shorter reserve life this year than we had last year, so a bit of an increase in our depletion rate. So our profit margin is not quite as good as it was, but, you know, really I think our efficiencies from an operating margin and a profit margin perspective are pretty unique in this Canadian energy sector. You know, in some ways they're even unique for us. This past quarter, we had the lowest total cash costs on a per unit basis of any quarter in our 13-year history. So, you know, I think that's an amazing feat. And, you know, maybe, you know, necessity being the mother of all invention, they've got low gas prices, and so we've had to become more efficient, which I think is reflected in our performance.
Okay. Turning to Scott Robinson, our COO and VP of Operations. Scott, our operating costs this quarter reflect a further decrease to what is already an industry-leading cost structure. Can you comment on the reasons for this decrease and whether we see this decrease as sustainable into the future?
Yeah, Jim, thanks. The first quarter cost before transportation of $1.96 is down about 6% quarter over quarter and quite a bit more year over year. That reflects the combination, firstly, of an overall increase in our production volume, which certainly helps per unit operating costs. But secondly, some specific reductions that we've been able to achieve in methanol consumption and road maintenance. We're quite happy, obviously, with these reductions, but we're not entirely satisfied with our cost level. We've got a number of cost improvement initiatives that we continue to focus on to try to bring this cost down, maintain it, or bring it further below this $2 per BOE level. Some of the things that we're looking at, the handling and disposal of water, which constitutes about 11% of our costs, our use of electrical power, which is about 17%, and labor costs. So we're going to continue to focus on a number of items, and we're determined to maintain our position as a leading low-cost producer in this basin.
Okay. Now, turning to our VP of Exploitation, JP Lachance. JP, in our release, we talk about the focus on more liquids-rich formations in the first quarter. Can you elaborate on this and tell us about the expected economic outcomes of these wells?
Yes, Jim. We've been steadily increasing our corporate liquid content up from around 18 barrels per million of gas at the beginning of the quarter to over 21 barrels per million this past month. We weighted our Q1 program towards the richer zones like the Cardium and Kiskew and Sundance and the Flare, and in certain areas the Notikewin. Results have been consistent with our expectations, and our early estimates suggest that our Q1 program could yield 25 to 30% internal rate of return, and that's using the actual dollars we spent on these wells at current strip prices. So we're poised to drill some more of these for the rest of the year.
Okay. JP, in our first quarter release, we comment about yet another new formation to which we've applied our successful horizontal well drilling, the Blue Sky. Can you tell us a little more about this formation and our results there?
Yeah, we're pleased with our Blue Sky horizontal results so far. Our first well came on in November at 6 million a day, and it's holding up nicely. Our second well just came on, and it's still cleaning up, so it's early days. We run these wells through our plant refrigerant facility, so liquid yields on these wells are about 15 to 20 barrels per million of gas, half of which is condensate. But Once our deep cut facilities are installed, these yields will increase to closer to 30 barrels per million, and that doesn't include ethane. We don't extract ethane like in some other areas, but if we did, that would increase our total liquids to 70 barrels per million. The reality is, with the price of ethane, it makes more economical sense for us to leave that ethane in the gas phase. So it's still early in the development, but we consider the Blue Sky akin to our flare wells with similar liquid contents, maybe slightly higher drilling costs, but we should achieve similar returns. And we see about 20 follow-up locations on our lands.
Okay. Now, Scott, can you describe what we've done to expand and enhance our gathering and processing infrastructure so far this year? Our first quarter report indicates the work at the Nose Hill plant as well as major intrafield pipeline installation. How will these impact our plant performance and our processing capacity?
Yeah, this last quarter we undertook some actually relatively small but still very meaningful activities on the facilities front. We finished off the Nose Hill plant expansion, which occurred largely over 2011, and all we did there was we dropped in our 11th compressor, taking that capacity up to 111 or 110 million a day. That's more than what's going through there. We've got some extra capacity, some redundancy. We also laid a major pipeline to interconnect the Old Man and Nose Hill fields and transfer some volumes over from Old Man to create some capacity at that plant and to balance out production between the two plants. That pipeline will also be a fairly significant pipeline to gather the 2012 flare wells that we plan to drill over the balance of the year. So it's got a multi-purpose there. All of these projects have set us up with about 50 million cubic feet of capacity between those two plants, room for which to grow. In addition to these projects, we've undertaken some plant optimization work at Wildhay and Nose Hill, and that combined with the redistribution of gas between those two plants has allowed us to achieve some pretty significant increases in liquid recoveries just in the existing processes we have to date. And those increases, along with what JP mentioned on our shift in focus, has brought our corporate liquid content up, and it's continuing to increase as we speak over the last couple of weeks here. So we're very pleased with that.
Okay. Now, turning to Tim Louie, our VP of Land. Tim, this most recent report details the funds that we spent on land in Q1. Are we expanding our existing areas, or are we looking at new prospective areas?
Jim, the answer would be yes to both parts of your question. We are still acquiring lands in our established core areas, and we have been acquiring lands in new prospective areas. During the first quarter, 22 sections were acquired for $2.2 million. This works out to an average cost of $154 per acre. Out of the 22 sections, 17 were acquired in established areas. Of note, 11 sections were acquired in the Kiskew Smoky area, which is within the liquid-rich Cardium trend. Touching on the second part of your question, 5 out of 22 sections were acquired in new prospect areas. Posting and acquisition of additional lands within these new areas will continue throughout the year. As a result of the low gas price environment, we have seen a softening of the average acquisition price at this year's Crown sales. For the first 5 sales of this year, industry spent $308 million to acquire 1.64 million acres, and this works out to an average price of $188 per acre. And it should be noticed that this is just for petroleum natural gas leases and licenses. It does not include oil sands dispositions. And by comparison, during the first 5 sales of 2011, industry spent $632 million to acquire 2.21 million acres, and that equates to an average price of $286 per acre. So we're confident that we can assemble significant land positions within these new prospect areas, but hopeful we can do so at reasonable acquisition costs.
Okay. Now, Scott, we've got some dates and comments about our deep cut enhancements to our Old Man and Nose Hill plants in our first quarter report. Can you explain those plans and elaborate on the expected impacts?
Yeah, I won't go into too much detail. The press release has the dates there, but we're on schedule for a Q3 startup of the Old Man deep cut project. And just as a reminder of what that's all about, we're expecting it to take the plant recovery liquid level at that facility from about 21 to about 35 barrels per million from the existing feed stream. So what does that mean? It's about 1,000 barrels a day of additional liquid above what we're doing today at the cost of about 2.5 million cubic feet of additional gas shrinkage. So knocking out those molecules that make up that 1,000 barrels a day is going to shrink our sales gas and lean it up a little bit. But if you play with the numbers, that's quite a substantial increase in value. We're just now completing the engineering part of a no-till plant deep cut project, and we would expect that to proceed into the fabrication phase in the latter part of the summer, and we're expecting somewhere to break ground site construction at the end of the year and start up the no-till deep cut in early 2013. Again, with a similar impact, about a 10 barrel per million increase on a current 80 million cubic feet per day feed stream there, so about 800 barrels a day of incremental liquids from the existing feed stream. Now, if we grow production over the balance of the year, then that impact will obviously increase.
Okay, so turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, we've described activity in new areas in our Q1 report. We've noted that there is production behind the pipe there. What can you tell us about the prospects we have in those areas and how much follow-up activity we can foresee in these areas?
Jim, Pato is a recently drilled successful Wilrich and Notikewin horizontal step-out wells in five new areas. Three of these new areas are still behind pipe waiting to be tied in. Although we don't usually like to provide a lot of detail on our newest project areas, I can say that collectively the results from the new wells suggest an additional 34 to 60 future horizontal development locations could be drilled, and we'll likely want to build two new gas plants. Additional wells are planned for the balance of 2012 and into 2013 to help determine facility requirements, but since our Wilrich and Notikewin gas is less liquids rich than some of our other targets, the pace of this activity will be influenced by natural gas prices. Aside from these details, Jim, the key message I'd like to emphasize is that even in a challenging business environment like we've got today, Pato continues to build and add to our drilling and land inventory faster than we're developing it.
Okay. Scott, you know, we're seeing all sorts of new demand for natural gas as more and more applications switch over from gasoline and distillates to natural gas. Does Pato have any plans to take advantage of this move?
Yeah, Jim, it looks like we're entering, or some say we're entering, the golden age of natural gas as a primary fuel source. We plan to join that move towards substitution. We're in the early phase of some of our ideas here, but if you just look at it on face value, when $2 of natural gas will give you the same work energy as $40 of diesel, it's kind of a no-brainer to make that change. Right now, we're in the early stages of ordering equipment to construct a compressed natural gas filling station at our Old Man plant. We've seen a lot of the larger gas companies throughout industry kind of leading the way on this front, and we're quite excited about it. What we intend to do is move towards fueling some of our field vehicles, all of our field vehicles eventually, 50 of them, with natural gas, and as well utilize natural gas as a substitute for diesel on a couple of our drilling rigs. One of our drilling contractors has significant knowledge and experience in this area, and we're collaborating closely with them, and we're quite excited about the cost reductions associated with this fuel switch. So it's a neat little sideline to our business, and no doubt we'll have some cost reduction impact.
Okay. So, JP, can you give us an update of where our current production stands? In our release, we referenced the fact that we have four wells completed but not on stream, as well as five wells that await completion right after breakup. Do we have an estimate of the behind-the-pipe production associated with those wells?
Yeah, Jim, our current production range is between 41,000 to 42,000 BOEs a day. We have approximately 2,000 BOEs a day of production that's waiting on tie-in that'll happen immediately after a breakup. We estimate an additional 2,000 BOEs a day that's behind pipe, which is either restricted or waiting on tie-ins for strategic reasons that Dave alluded to earlier. We're also ready to execute on 3.4 net completions on wells that were drilled before breakup, and if the results of those wells mature as we expect them to, then we should have another 1,700 barrels of oil equivalent day of net production to tie in. So lots yet to come.
Okay. Turning to Kathy Turge, our CFO and VP of Finance, The first quarter report shows our net debt is up from last year and last quarter, though a little lower than it was at the end of Q3 last year. We've also announced in our first quarter report that our credit lines were reviewed and increased by a little bit more than the amount of that net debt increase. How are we positioned right now to continue with our capital plans? Also, how does the recent issue of senior notes with Prudential fit into our borrowing plans? What advantages did issuing the senior notes have, and can we repeat this?
Well, our equity issue that was done in December of 2011 obviously reduced our net debt at the end of the year, but that, along with our increased bank lines and our strong funds from operations, gives us the flexibility to fund our capital plans over the next year, so we are well positioned to achieve our goals. The issuance of the senior notes was the beginning of our plan to diversify our debt structure, so we're starting to combine a fixed rate, longer term component with the short term funding that our credit facility provides, and this decreases some of our exposure to longer term interest rate increases, gives us some certainty for planning. And we can certainly do another $25 million U.S. under the existing shelf agreement that we have with Prudential. And right now, if we were to do a similar note issuance like the one we did in January at 4.39%, we'd be looking at around a 4.7% rate for 7 years. Through this issuance in January, we also received an NAIC2 rating, and this allows us to go back to the market, the private debt market, at future times if we so choose, and take some of that rating risk out, so our rates that we can borrow at should be continue to be favorable.
Okay. Now, turning back to Darren, Darren, there's doom and gloom articles. Others that are bullish that say we hit the low articles. There are pleasantly plans for exporting LNG, often quoted in the bullish cases. There's the Pickens plan. Even we are looking at burning natural gas instead of distillates for some of our own energy needs. Can you share your view of where the natural gas market may be going and how Peyto fits into that future and how much or how little Peyto depends on that future?
Well, Jim, that's kind of a loaded question. I could probably sit here and talk for an hour on my opinion on natural gas. In addition to the Pickens plan, we have the Robinson plan where we're going to burn our own natural gas in our trucks and in our drilling rigs. So, yeah, definitely, you know, I think natural gas is a logical choice. People see it as a logical choice. We've got an abundance of it, obviously, in North America. It's the cleanest burning hydrocarbon fuel we've got. You know, I think demand for it over the long term is just going to continue to increase. We're seeing the switch from coal to gas in a big way in North America right now. Power generation is consuming a lot of gas, a lot more than anybody ever thought that they would, and quickly. So, you know, I think the long-term outlook for natural gas is still very strong. In my mind, you know, I'm still a big bull when it comes to natural gas. We've got a bit of a bubble, though, in North America right now. There's no question. The warm winter we just had, you know, we've got too much gas in storage. But that's a temporary thing. You know, when you look at world prices, there's a huge contango between North American prices and the rest of the world. And you just can't have that kind of price difference for very long. There's too many entrepreneurs in the world that are going to take advantage of that, get involved in, you know, whether it's exporting LNG or it's increasing domestic demand, that contango isn't going to exist forever. So, you know, I think, and I truly believe that the longer outlook on natural gas in North America is for higher gas prices from where we are today. But, you know, it's interesting, this low natural gas price environment, even for us, is really driving an improvement in efficiencies. We're just having to adapt to it. We're getting better at making money at these low levels so that when we do see a longer term increase, I mean, we're very well set up to profit from that. So, you know, how Peyto fits in that big picture, I think is pretty simple. I think we have to continue to compete with all other supplies, both domestically and internationally for that matter. And, you know, right now I think we are very competitive. So we can continue to generate very good returns developing and producing natural gas resources in the Deep Basin where we are today. And of course our goal is to stay that way. You know, as Scott mentioned, we're not content. We're not going to sit and just, you know, enjoy these low costs that we have. We're going to make those lower. And so I think, you know, long term, we fit quite nicely in how natural gas is going to evolve over the long term. The short term, it's a little different. Obviously, we've got to be very flexible. We've got to be very dynamic. We've got to deal with this $1.50 AECO price that we're currently in. And this year's capital program is designed to do that. We're not backing off, though. We're going to take advantage, as Tim mentioned, of lower land costs to acquire more inventory. We're going to take advantage of lower service costs, lower activity in the industry. And I think, before the end of the summer, we're going to start to see a recovery in natural gas prices. And so we want to make sure that we're continuing to move forward to that end. And, we are planning a $400 million capital program. I know our current pace isn't reflective of that, but that is the plan we're on. And we've got a lot of good opportunities, as JP mentioned, to make very good rate of return, even at these prices, with over $400 million of capital programs. So, I think that means it's going to be a very busy year for us, our busiest year. We've never spent that much money. We've never invested that much, and we've never been that busy before. So, we get through 2012 at a $400 million capital program. It's going to be a record, another record year for Peyto. And it'll be, I'm sure it'll be another record year of growth. So it's going to be a very exciting year for us.
Okay. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to questions from investors and analysts and other people in the investment community.
The first question is from Robert Walensky from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Robert.
Congratulations on the great quarter again. You put in the front page of the release about the cost to build new production. I was just wondering what you're seeing in terms of rig rates and service costs, and how do you structure your contracts to optimize your upfront investment?
We haven't seen much movement on the rig and service costs at this point yet. We're patiently awaiting to see what happens after breakup here. But we haven't entered any long-term contracts, per se, fixed-price contracts with our services at this point. But we're expecting over the fall that with decreased activity, the opportunity may be there to lock in some lower service costs.
Okay. Is there any kind of term we should think about as far as how long those contracts go for?
Traditionally, we haven't locked in beyond a year, year and a half of activity, but we have strong working relationships with our service providers. So with respect to the security of having the ability to tie up services, we don't have any fear from that standpoint. But when and if the prices reach a level that look extremely attractive, I guess we would consider longer terms to those deals.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Once again, as a reminder, please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. Following question is from Davis Town from Mackenzie Coondale. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, two questions, if I may. First is on dividend policy. So, after converting to a corporation, it'd be great if you could provide the rationale for maintaining the dividend. Darren, as you say, your team has over, 10 years of inventory to work with. And, you're growing production per share, and it seems like CapEx generates a great return on it pretty much in any price environment. So when it comes down to it, you guys are, great capital allocators, and that's fantastic, right? But, just wondering why you haven't cut the dividend to zero and compound that cash at, X percent instead of zero.
It's a tough question. Davis, I think obviously the dividend and the payout model that we have evolved out of our structure as a trust. And I think when we got into the trust structure, arguably it was a more tax-efficient way for the organization to continue to move forward. At the time we converted to a trust, corporate tax rates were sort of 40% levels, and by obviously flowing income out to individual shareholders, we were able to overall enjoy a lower tax rate than that corporate rate, and so it made good sense. And it also created a lot of capital discipline. We would pride ourselves that we already have the capital discipline to allocate capital well, as you suggest. But, when you're backed against the wall, you always become better.
And when you've got limited capital to work with, you know, I think everybody, even at Peyto, would agree that we make better choices with what to do with that capital. So, you know, when we converted back to a corporation, we had lots of opportunity to put capital to work. As you suggest, our horizontal well technology and our drilling inventory has really exploded, and there is a lot of opportunity to put that capital to work. And so we did cut back the payout quite a bit at the time. And our expectation was that, you know, we were going to deliver more return to shareholders in the form of growing assets and reinvesting cash flow than the yield piece was really going to give them. That was more of a smaller complementary bit. And, you know, so our dividend policy was really to leave the dividend where it was and to grow our asset base and to grow our cash flows. And, you know, if we were in, I guess, a normal natural gas price environment right now, we'd have much higher gas prices and we'd have much higher cash flows. And that whole payout ratio would continue to shrink over time, becoming, you know, on an ongoing basis, a smaller and smaller part of the total return we're delivering to shareholders. But, you know, holding that flexibility, having that capital discipline, you know, being able to dividend some money back to shareholders, you know, I think a lot of shareholders still enjoy that. They still like the fact that they're getting paid perhaps to wait for some natural gas price recovery. You know, they're getting paid in the short term here to wait for us to get even more active and put more capital to work. But you're right. I mean, as we move forward, we do have a lot of great opportunities to invest in, and so we have a lot of competition for that capital right now. And that's something that the board has to constantly consider.
Yeah, thanks for that. So my second question relates to production growth in the depressed price environment that we are in today. And I know you must get this a lot, so please bear with me. So just wondering if you could walk us through your thought process in assessing the present value cost benefit, you know, like building production today and, you know, saving 10% on well completion costs versus building production a year from today, where we don't have to assume or hope that the price of gas is higher. We, you know, hopefully it will definitely be higher next year, where, you know, the increase in gas prices will, I hope, more than offset the increase in costs. So why is it not worth waiting?
You know, Davis, in some ways you kind of answered your own question a little bit there, but at the same time, that's exactly our thought processes too. I mean, we've run all the economics, and we've looked at, you know, just building it today and delaying bringing it on for 6 months, and of course, you know, the rate of return is higher, the NPVs are higher if you actually wait and expose the new flush production to, well, and the way the strip sits today, it might be 30 or 40% higher gas price in just 6 months. And of course, you want to take advantage of the lower service costs if they exist. If we can get 10 or 15% reduction in costs, then let's build it today because it'll be cheaper than waiting, because we know those service costs are going to go back up if the gas price goes back up, because then everybody starts drilling again. The problem, I guess, is that you're banking on the fact that gas prices are going to go back up, or when they're going to go back up on that whole model. And so that's kind of the risk in that build it now and wait and bring it on later strategy, which does obviously yield better economics. It makes sense, but you don't know for sure if or when those gas prices are going to recover. So if they didn't recover, then you would be better off to bring the production on today, and you'd have to obviously make the economics work today. So that's kind of where we sit. We kind of look at the economics and say, look, if they work today and if we can get lower service costs today, even if gas prices don't recover, they still look good. Well, then let's bring the gas on. I know we'd make a little more money if we waited and we got a better price, but we're not, you know, we don't know when that better price is going to come necessarily. The strip shows us one thing, but, you know, that's not a foregone conclusion that we're going to get that strip. So that's where we're kind of struggling a little bit, obviously. And you know, I think our capital program so far this year is a little reflective of that reluctance to be overly aggressive right now when the price is really low. I mean, this second quarter, we've seen some of the lowest natural gas prices in a decade, and we hope, like everyone else, that you know, this is the bottom and that we'll see gas price recovery from here. but you know, maybe it does take longer. I don't know. The production in the U.S. seems very resilient. We haven't seen any declines yet. We've been in the $2 Henry Hub here for, you know, a month, and yet we haven't seen pipe flows start to tip over yet. And I would have thought they would have, but so that's the, you know, the challenge that we have, obviously, moving forward. But as soon as we do see some cost improvements, as soon as we do see a little bit of a hint that that price recovery is on its way, then obviously, you know, we're going to really put the boots to it and get after our opportunities.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G.
Okay, well, thanks to everybody who tuned in this morning. I realize we're reporting in one of the busiest weeks. Everybody seems to be reporting this week, so lots of conference calls to listen in to, besides ours, of course. So thanks if you've listened in to ours, and I encourage everybody to come out to our AGM on June 6th and hear more about Peyto, and of course, tuning in next quarter. In August, when we're releasing our second quarter, we'll have some more exciting things to talk about, including you know, some more work on our facilities and getting after the second part of this drilling program for the rest of the year. So thanks for tuning in this morning.